Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a combined project of KCBX and our team of program hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, host Fred Monroe and his guests will take a serious look at how public agencies can help develop positive communication tools to help build more inclusive communities. Most people would agree finding ways within our communities to help us promote diversity, equity, and inclusion will make everyone's life a little more rewarding. We move through our daily lives looking for ways to feel valued and connected to the community around us. DEI programs can be part of this process. So stick around and find out how the city and county of San Luis Obispo, yes, government, have become key leaders in developing these community building tools. And now, let's join Fred Monroe and his guests. Over to you, Fred.
Thanks, Brad, and welcome to Central Coast Voices. Good afternoon. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's changes will affect tomorrow's community. I'm glad you're with us today. We're going to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion and building communities with those tools. We move through our daily lives looking at for ways to feel more valued and connected to our communities around us, which is a reasonably common thing for people to feel they need to look at. The tools that make our lives more meaningful are always important, but seldom really openly discussed and looked at as how they fit into what's going on. We want to take a look at how communities build better relationships within the community, within organizations in the community, and beyond. The City of San Luis Obispo and San Luis Obispo County Behavioral Health Departments, along with many other private and public sector organizations, have made conscious decisions to address and promote stronger organizations and communities focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Today, we're going to take a look at how DEI programs are run in the City of San Luis Obispo and the County of San Luis Obispo with managers of their programs. It's a concept that we would think of and I think of as an important tool in our communities. It has become, to some extent, politicized in a lot of circumstances in the last few years. We will do our best to not politicize it today. What we want to do is really talk about the programs and things that they are doing. We get a better understanding of what this is about, because for a lot of people, until it becomes a political issue, DEI programs and the nature of how they fit into life just are not part of their daily lives. Today I've got Nestor Veloz Casalacqua. Okay, and I'm going to get Nestor's last name wrong three or four times, and I apologize. He's the DEI manager for the City of San Luis Obispo. Matt Pennon is with us. He's the Diversity and Equity and Inclusion Program Manager for the County of San Luis Obispo Behavioral Health Departments. Gentlemen, this is a topic I guess you probably have to answer on a daily basis. You probably have what I would refer to as the typical elevator speech, which is, what in the world is a DEI program and why do government agencies participate in that? And I'll go one step further, and that is, Matt, we want to look at probably how that happens to fit in the behavioral health department in the county. In Nestor's case, you're part of the citywide program. And so we need to probably define what that is, too. Gentlemen, give me your best definition of what DEI is, and we'll work from there, and we'll go on.
Fred, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Nestor.
Yeah, for being here. So the five-minute pitch elevator. Well, DEI really is about everyone in the community. It's about bringing the people together. It's about really looking into ways to build community, to make everyone feel that they belong, making sure that they can go to city council and see themselves represented, that decision-making processes are key to their well-being and livelihoods. And in a short sentence, DEI is for everyone, and it's meant to really bring the community together. At the city level, we have specific goals, specific work plans that really speak directly to the needs of the community. And we really want to focus in two areas. One is organizational transformation, what the city as an organization can do internally to start making some changes. And externally, out in the community, really finding out what our diverse communities are asking us to do, to make sure that we're building bridges, to make sure that, metaphorically, obviously, in the way that we want to build a community together. And also making sure that we are there to listen to who they are. What are some of those struggles and how city, you know, city government can make some changes and bringing those voices forward. And particularly looking at historically what happened to so many different underserved and underprivileged community members that sometimes in history we forgot about them. And how can we bring them and those voices and those perspectives up front and center to make decisions that are going to impact the entire community?
So part of what you are put in the position to address, I would classify as a balancing act, which is what you do for these needs to the broader community, but also what you do to address these needs within the workforce of city government. If you have city employees that feel they are not included effectively, that's going to affect not only their work, but how the city presents itself to the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. And that becomes kind of a balancing act. Matt, I'll throw to you the question. How does this happen to fit into the behavioral health department? I mean, are you doing this only within the behavioral health department, or is that the arm of the county that the county's decided this kind of exposure and effort needs to be made in?
Well, thank you again, Fred, for having us here today and discussing this topic because, like Nestor said, it's important to all of us. You're going to hear a lot of similarities when Nestor and I talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion and the programming that we have both within the Behavioral Health Department and the City of San Luis Obispo. My focus is specifically on the department itself. So our county does not have an official program for diversity, equity, and inclusion. But within the Behavioral Health Department, we do have a specific mandate from the state and also internally that we pride ourselves on. Like the city of San Luis Obispo, we are focused on two different areas. So number one, internally, how are we supporting our staff that come from a diverse array of communities to do some really amazing work? And then also externally, how are we looking at the community of the county that is coming in and seeking services from us? And within behavioral health, we have drug and alcohol services and we have mental health services. Just by mentioning those two different services, we know that there's a lot of challenges associated with those. So we have folks that are coming in and they're experiencing some of the most drastic challenges that they're having in their life, whether it's addiction, struggling with mental health, those types of things. And it's really important that when they come in and seek services or even considering that, that we are understanding to the best extent possible where they're coming from, understanding their culture, their language, maybe some of the challenges associated with that. So this work is about everyone. It's about everybody in our community. You talked about it's a balancing act. It is. It's a balancing act, but also understanding that the scales have been weighted at many different times in our history, that often underserved populations have not had a fair shot or an equal opportunity to come in and receive services.
For both of you, how long ago did the city and the county deem these to be important things to look at? Because I'm sure if I go back 15 years, or in some cases maybe 15 months, these kind of things were not talked about. Mm-hmm. They are the proverbial, and as part of my comments, everybody needs to look at them in their life, regardless of what their background is. And most people probably haven't even thought about taking a look. it's kind of in the same categories, I would say, of if your life and your relationships need some help of a mental health professional, if you were looking in an environment where nobody had any idea that kind of position was even available to you to look for, you would just say, oh, I'm in this by myself, and not realize that there may be 40 people in the community with the skills and the background and the professional expertise to help you. Mm-hmm. So at what point and how did the county and the city of San Luis Obispo decide that this was an important factor to address?
Well, when it comes to the County of San Luis Obispo and the Behavioral Health Department specifically, the DEI program manager position has been around at least for the past, I want to say, 4 years. The state itself has been focused on what we consider the ethnic services manager position since about 2010. But I would also argue and comment and say that, you know, the discussion of DEI is always something that we're discussing, whether it's something that we're calling out or addressing specifically, because when we're creating policies, programs, looking at services, those discussions that we're having are when we create these policies, these programs, these services, how are they impacting the communities that we are tasked with as public servants to serve in a fair and equitable way? So many of the conversations that we're having today and that we've had yesterday and then the years past are discussing diversity, equity, inclusion. And now what I'm focused on is how do we elevate voices that have not been a part of that conversation, that when they are at the table with us and providing us information and guidance, that we can do better quality work. That's the goal of behavioral health, is that when folks come in, that they are acknowledged, that they are involved in their recovery process, they're involved in their therapeutic process, and that they're reflected in that process as well, so that they have a clinician or a therapist or even the front office staff that are there and seeing them for who they are and truly empathetic and want to guide them from point A to point B and C and D and all the way down, so that they can figure out who they are as their true authentic self, and live their best quality life.
Mm-hmm. I suspect that for a lot of folks, there's skepticism or misconceptions about what these kind of programs are for. My hunch is on a daily basis you hear from someone either directly, if you're lucky, or indirectly through some upper management or county board of supervisors or city council about, gee, I cannot believe that this government agency is wasting any money on whether or not we decide that the San Luis Obispo Airport doesn't seem to have enough multilingual materials available for the average person coming into our community. So those kind of objections, and let's be realistic, we live in a society where the objectors tend to be more conspicuous and more vocal in our societies, especially with government agencies. If either of you happened to work for, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and doing diversity programs for that organization, you're the chairman of the board of Kentucky Fried Chicken is not going to get a phone call from somebody in San Luis Obispo saying, this is what one of your employees talked to me about and blah blah blah, and I was being rude to somebody else, and we needed to look at this. That's not going to happen when we're dealing with city and county government, where I can tell you everybody that wants to talk to their supervisor or their city council member can readily find them and can find them on very short notice. So I suspect the jobs that you do may be more relaxed and less misconceived, if you will, if you were in a private sector position as opposed to a city or county sector. I talk too much.
Yeah.
Well, how do you address that?
Right. So if I actually may chime in a little bit about Matt's response, you know, the word equity has something that has always been partly embedded in policymaking, in decision-making processes, whether it is at a private in the private sector or sometimes as well, and you know, mainly in the public sector. And the notion of equity has always been built in the language that we use. So for the city of San Luis Obispo, there are usually catalysts or moments that really led to the development of the creation of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, right? And the office has been active for the last 2.5 years. And really, one of those catalysts is really paying attention to what the community needs from us. It's really understanding what are those gaps. Basically, if we didn't know what happens out in the community, how do we know what we need to provide to them? And so the city really invested in finding out what are some of those issues, what are some of those gaps, and that really paid off because then we were able to develop a better, stronger relationship with community members, but also working with our nonprofit agencies, our partners, because they actually are doing the work themselves as well. And when we build those relationships, we are better attuned at addressing the issues in our community. Now, to your point, to your other question about what happens at the private sector or the public sector, I would say that coming into this job, something that I mentioned was to the leadership team was that DEI has a different flavor depending on where you go. So at a private sector, you're going to find different challenges that you will find in the public sector. So then DEI is going to focus on different issues and different gaps and what may potentially is driving the organization in a negative way, right? But in the public sector, we have a dual responsibility to the organization, but as well out to the community as public servants, just like Matt said. So I think it really depends on what are those issues that we're really trying to concentrate and build the relationship internally and then externally into the community, right? In either way, we are providing a service, a program, or a support into the community, right? Even if it is a private business, they want to make sure that they know community members that are going to get a service from them or a product that they can actually feel welcome going into those businesses, or they see themselves reflected in their values as an organization, right? And then on the public sector side, I would say that it's basically the same thing, but also really paying attention that our efforts will have a long-lasting impact when it comes to policymaking decisions in the future, how future generations are going to be looking into making those changes themselves or seeing themselves that they can make changes as being part of that space. And if we're not able to create those spaces now through policymaking decisions or through partnerships, we're going to be not fully investing into the community. So we want to make sure that we're always building on those aspects. And I think partly of the work that definitely the work that Matthew does as well as me, it's like really looking at those areas of growth in which we can bring those different voices together, right? And create programs or policies or projects that really speak to the entire community.
And can I just add to that too? So what we do is we take time to listen. We may be the experts in this field, but we are not always the ones boots on the ground actually experiencing the impact of our policies and programs. And what I consider is like continuous quality improvement. We can only do better and be better by listening to the folks that are receiving our services, by listening to our community members, because diversity, equity, inclusion is always changing. You know, one policy that we may implement or a program 1 year may be making a great impact. And then the next year, maybe there's some challenges with that. And we're not going to know that unless we listen to our community, we do a survey. We do this both externally and internally because our staff that are working with our clients and community members have that direct contact and they can let us know what we can do to make improvements. It goes to the thread that we are all connected, that this work is not just about one person or one population. It is about all of us together. And if we're not all successful, you know, then we're not going to have this thriving community that we pride ourselves on. We love living here on the Central Coast. None of us would be here if we didn't love it. We are passionate about the work that we're doing. We want to collaborate. We cannot do this work in silos. And that's why this work is important, because if one of our community populations or members is failing, then we're all failing together. And we have to do this work together. And it's not divisive. It is really about community.
I had to, as my passing thought as you were finishing that was, one of the things that's probably most key to that for both of you is to realize that there is a large portion of the population that is already skeptical about the value of doing this kind of program. So how do you learn from those people? I mean, I suspect each of you on hopefully not a daily basis, but it may be the case, I'm here from someone in the community or someone within the government that has some comment like, gee, why do we bother with this? Or why is this important? Or why do we care? And I would love to hear how you address that.
Well, I can say that we do hear those things, but what I want to say is that everybody's voice and input is valued in this process. It's our differences that our goal is to take and turn those into strengths. And we all have such different experiences in life. And as you were talking, Fred, I was thinking about, you know, this work is not just something professional for me. This is something very personal. Growing up on the Central Coast as a white male, I've experienced quite a bit of privilege. And it is through my own personal experiences and professional experiences that I have seen that privilege come to fruition. But then also really had to apply empathy and humility and understanding to that and see that not everybody gets to experience the world in the same way that I do. And that's really unfortunate because I've had a pretty good life. I've had my challenges, but I want everybody to have that same positive experience. And when it comes to behavioral health, you know, we're focused on individuals that are having some pretty intense struggles in their lives. I've had my own challenges with my own mental health. And, you know, when we talk about stigma and those biases, we can't do better work unless we call these things out and then call people in to help us do this amazing work together.
And to add to Matt's point, too, he did it so eloquently when he's talking about the fact that everyone's perspective and thoughts are valued. And really what happens sometimes is that there is misinformation out there about the work that we do. And in a way, we have to demystify that. Something that I think we've been doing really well. There's so many of us in the field, but not many of us in the field here in the county. But it's really opening up those conversations with them, bringing them in to understand that in no shape or form my perspective are going to be in a way shunning their own values, right? The idea is to actually bring them together, making sure that those voices, those perspectives are being held and acknowledged. And again, it's to build that community, right? We are not able to move together if we don't actually listen to each other. And that's critical in the work that we do. So the demystification of what the work of DI is about is critical to be able to have those dialogues with the community. And while it may happen at times, while we may not be able to change someone's heart all the time, the idea is to have those dialogues, to continue to be welcoming to that experience and to build momentum with the community members that are behind us, that really love the work that we do, and they see themselves represented in the different programs or projects or initiatives that we have out there. And that's critical because, again, they speak volumes for us because they really understand what DEI is or equity work is or social justice work is. And I think those actually can show the community why this type of work is important, you know, at a governmental level.
I promised you I would stay out of politics, but with a yes but, if you will. I suspect that what you do and how you do it for a lot of people wasn't even on anyone's radar until, again, this presidential election, when the commentary about a mixed race woman being one of the candidates for president brought up the question as to whether or not, I think some people referred to her as the token DEI candidate for the first time, kind of things. Please, those are not my words. That's what people have said about it. I suspect that is has put what you do in more in the forefront. So some of the people who in our community who have been ignoring or been able to just keep things related to DEI efforts out of their daily life are probably now asking questions. And I suspect that means that also that the people you work for through our elected officials also are asking questions. I'm delighted that we have programs. When I found out about doing this program and realized that we had both someone working on this in county mental health and probably behavioral health in the city of San Luis Obispo, it was like, gee, what an incredible topic for the program, because this is really about what Central Coast Voices talks about on a reasonably regular basis. I realize it's probably in an area you don't want to talk about very much in deference to your positions in government, but did this election put enough things out that you were getting new questions that you hadn't had before?
I can say that the election results are the election results.
Yeah.
And what we really look into about the work that I do at the city of San Luis Obispo and also in collaboration with my colleagues and the partners in the community is really focusing at the local level how we can make those changes, right? So by really focusing at the local level, we want to make sure that the voices of our communities, of our diverse communities, are being uplifted and brought forward. As a clear example, I'll give you a quick example. It's we are in the process right now of we have our survey for the new financial plan for fiscal year 2025-27. And what we have done is to make sure that survey is available in English and Spanish, making sure that we are doing a lot of outreach with our partners in the community to make sure that we are collecting information directly from the community. We want to hear from them, right? And that's where we really focus at the local level, making sure that those changes that we're wanting to see, where we invite the community to participate, that they're able to see that those changes will happen because they are engaged in policymaking process. They're engaged with the city. And so that's really the focus, at least from the city of San Luis Obispo perspective. The results are the results. There's not much of a change that we can do, but definitely at a local level, that's where we continue to build that stronger relationship with the community.
We'll get back to this in a moment. I want to make sure we get our break in here. For those of you who are not familiar with the program, we take a break at the bottom of the hour because we have kind of learned that if we keep talking for an hour and don't give you a chance for a break, sometimes you don't stay with us and listen to the whole program. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is Central Coast Voices. Thank you.
Ahead today on KCBX, it's Latino USA coming up at 2 o'clock. That's followed by Fresh Air at 3, Marketplace at 4, and then a look at the news and all things considered from 4:30 to 6:30. Right now, let's return to Central Coast Voices with your host, Fred Monroe. Back to you, Fred.
Thank you, Brad, and we're back together with you. We are talking with the managers of the DEI program for the city of San Luis Obispo and the DEI program for Behavioral Health Department of the County of San Luis Obispo. Matt and Nestor are with us today and having a delightful conversation about a topic that is more more publicly available for people to think about in recent times than it had been in the past. When we took the break, Matt, you had something you wanted to add to Nestor's last comments.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say diversity, equity, inclusion is not political. As much as we want to make it political, it's really not. It's about bringing folks together, highlighting voices, and highlighting everybody's voice. So we are not here saying that, no, you can't have a say in this type of work. We're saying we actually want to hear from you. We want to have you at the table with us. We have a diverse array of committees, of surveys, of opportunities to work with us both at the city and at the behavioral health level. I really look at, you know, these conversations right now as like a call to action to get more people involved in these conversations, to help us do this amazing work, to make sure that we are making the County of San Luis Obispo and the City of San Luis Obispo the best place for everybody that lives here, that works here, whether you're commuting in or you live here. When you're seeking out services within behavioral health, we want to make sure that you are heard, that you are seen, that you are engaged in these programs. I really like to highlight the aspect of inclusion and belonging rather than DEI. We want everybody to be included in these conversations, and the next step is we want you to belong in these programs and services in your communities. And we can't do that in silos. We have to do that together. So that's why throughout the County of San Luis Obispo, we do great partnership work together, whether it's at a county level, at a city level, with our nonprofit partners, with our organizations that are working directly with a vast array of communities, because we're serving those communities. And I always remind myself every day that I'm a public servant. I'm here to serve our community, and I'm part of that community. My family's part of that community. My friends are all part of that community. And this work is about all of us. And how do we work together? How do we have conversations that are going to be really complex and complicated and have a lot of emotions and feelings around them? But the end result is that we're doing great quality work. And that's why I say this is not political. This is about humanity. This is about our community.
I'm sorry if I even implied that it was the political issue. I agree with you. And my biggest concern was that I was surprised at the number of people who express some cynicism, if you will, about these kind of programs. We've seen it for a number of years. And things that could be about personal choices have become more political because people have decided that being loud is somehow better. And so
touched a little bit on it, but one of the areas that we're really tasked with too is like our language services. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to behavioral health, we have a lot of treatment plans that folks are agreeing to. And one thing that I always think about is if I didn't have this treatment plan in English for myself and I was being asked to sign it, would I be comfortable signing that? Would I be comfortable agreeing to that program? And my answer is no, I wouldn't. So I want to make sure that every person that comes in, whether it's Spanish, whether it's French, Russian, whatever it may be, has that same access. And not only is this access important, this access is the law as well. So what we do within our programs is following mandates and laws to make sure that everybody has that fair and equal access to all the different services that we're providing. I know behavioral health is very different than the city of San Luis Obispo because we're very focused on specific programs and services. And I just want to make it very clear that there is a vast array of responsibilities that we have, language, both internal and external. We are there working with all of our different partners, making sure that our services, programs, and policies are really doing the best quality work, not only for our staff, but also for our communities. And in addition to that, a lot of the work that we do is trainings. So making sure that our staff internally have all the tools that they need so that they can do the best quality work possible as well. So there's a lot of layers that we have to unpack when we're talking about our programs and the work that we're doing.
So I think this is probably a behavioral health issue, but I think it probably applies for both of you. A good portion of what you have to address on a daily basis, I suspect, has to do with whether or not the workforce within the government agencies you're with understands some of the cultural diversity issues of people, members of the community. If in behavioral health, if you're working with a behavioral health issue with, let's say, a family and a child that comes from some other culture, there may be parts of the value systems that they bring to the table that are so critical to the discussion that if they're not understood, you don't have willing participants in the process. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that comes up under all circumstances. People may feel unhappy that we spend money and effort on multilingual materials for elections, multilingual materials for how to ride the bus, multilingual materials for how we get help in behavioral health, because if they don't need it, John Q. Public doesn't need it. They're wondering why anybody should bother with it, when in reality it helps that person also because other members of the community around them are getting needs addressed that they didn't even know existed.
Mm-hmm. As I'm hearing you talk, Fred, what I'm thinking about in my head is the word empathy. And empathy is where you're taking yourself and putting yourself into somebody else's shoes and understanding what they might be experiencing or feeling in a certain situation. And I think that's something that we do need to have a discussion about. I feel so often we are focused on our own selves and our own experiences, but that doesn't capture the humanity that's at stake in this type of work. For us within behavioral health, we have families and children that are coming in and having some real significant challenges, and we have the potential to do more harm than good if we do not critically understand where they're coming from, those cultural differences, language differences, whether there are biases at play both internally and externally. Those are all things that we need to be aware of so that we can provide services that are going to be positive and impactful. And the ultimate goal is lead to great outcomes where these families are productive members of our society. They're engaged. They're included. You know, and we look at all different assets, whether it's the workforce, education, you name it. We're all in this together.
And to that point, I would say that, you know, building on empathy is critical in the work of equity, inclusion, diversity, social justice, because ultimately it's going to continue to help us better understand who are we serving, who are the members of the community who need that additional support compared to others, right? But that doesn't mean that someone is not going to get the support. Everyone will get the support. It's just that we need to be able to be more keen at applying an equity lens because we understand that someone might need certain services in Spanish at a longer period of time than in English, right? So making sure that those are available and they can be accessible by anyone. At the Sirius Leo, for example, something that we've done to be able to have a direct impact into the community was to develop the grant program that nonprofit agencies can actually apply for funding to really address some of those equity gaps that exist in the city. The city doesn't, you know, we don't itself produce all of the work, but we do it through partnerships with different nonprofit organizations. And organizations like Diversity Coalition, Slow County and Docu Support, Race Matters, they really look into addressing these major issues and gaps that exist in the community. And through the grant program, they're looking at developing new projects that welcome individuals into the city. Making sure that we build a more diverse and inclusive group of professionals that could, for example, be, join a governing body or a board that can help create these larger spaces where empathy is being discussed, where different perspectives are being brought in, where decision-making is inclusive. And so the city has been, like, to the point, Matt, like how the county has been looking at increasing services in a manner that are more equitable and then transformative for the experience of the community. The city has also been identifying how they can build on that, having these grant programs, and then in partnership with different nonprofit organizations, we can have a direct impact into the community.
I suspect as you're mentioning that, it just occurred to me that and it was, I mean, you mentioned it in your notes, and I'm sorry I didn't get to it yet, that having a university like Cal Poly on the edge of the city, I realize that the entire campus is not within in the city, but it's doggone close. You have a far more diverse population and a university environment, mm-hmm. and which happens to be a university that unfortunately does not have enough on-campus housing for the needs of its population. So the community surrounding the university is seeing more diversity challenges, if you will, than probably the rest of the county. Mm-hmm. And what things do you have working with Cal Poly, and how is that addressed?
So last year, we actually signed a memorandum of understanding with the Office of University Diversity and Inclusion at Cal Poly. And that goal of that particular MOU was to really identify ways in which we can create multicultural spaces for learning, for belonging, for community building, for creating connection and dialogue. And the first year, we provided a total of 8 different events, which could have been, for example, a panel discussion, a workshop, film screening, anything that really will invite the entire community to feel that they want to learn something that they haven't been exposed to in the past. And that partnership is crucial because, again, the Office of University Diversity and Inclusion, Audi, Cal Poly, has a direct impact on who they are interacting, the college population, right? But then, like you mentioned, Fred, a lot of them are actually also outside of the Cal Poly bound. So many of them are our community members, and they engage with us. So we want to make sure that there is this direct relationship, this community building process. And then community belonging series, which is what we have with Cal Poly, will continue until next year in June. And really, again, it's building community, bringing opportunities for dialogue, for engagement, exposing the community to new information that they haven't been exposed to in the past, making sure that there's really a connection that's being built with Cal Poly, the city, and obviously the county, making sure that we're actually utilizing our resources and leveraging our support, knowing very well, you know, who else is doing what that can really bring better connection, and then the impact directly into the community, not only in the city, but ultimately is going to be impactful for the entire county.
And I'd just like to add, from a behavioral health side of things, we look at Cal Poly and Cuesta College as like a huge asset for us. Mm-hmm. You know, within my program, we have on a regular basis a huge variety of student interns that come in and help our programming. We're leveraging their academic experience as well as their lived experience to help provide better services and programs and trainings to all of our staff. So I think, you know, those are things that we need to acknowledge, that we have this great opportunity. The Early Childhood Development and Psychology Department has been a great collaborator and partner for the Behavioral Health Department. And ultimately, we're thinking about long term, too, is, you know, if we bring these folks in and they become, you know, great assets to our department, can we bring them on as employees? What does that look like for them staying and living here within the county of San Luis Obispo? They're currently members. They are involved. And that goes back to this inclusion of belonging aspect, where we're really focused on how do we operate as a whole, but also identify that there are individual discrepancies that we need to acknowledge in order to do better and be better in this type of work.
In the work environment that both of you are in, I suspect that sometimes what you're looking at is not things related to what we specifically or historically look at as issues of lack of inclusion or lack of diversity. It comes to mind that I only have a birth. I have a child that is an adult who I'm the birth father for. I do not have the skill set to understand what is involved in being maybe an adoptive parent. But it's a tremendously large part of the population, and it's not an easily identifiable part of the population for people who are dealing with foster children, dealing with adopted children situations. Those are the kinds of what I would classify as diversity issues that may not always sit on the forefront. But my hunch is they are sometimes not the easiest to address, but they're the easiest to use to start a conversation. My hunch is you don't get people who are skeptical about the needs of an adopted child or a foster child the same way you get questions about people who are suspicious about the needs of someone who's only been in the United States for 6 months and barely has a green card and what's going on with them. So, I mean, have I missed the mark here, or is that a key factor?
Well, no, I would say that that is accurate, right? But it is also the narrative that we've been fed informally through media constantly, that it's easier and understandable for us to have more of a cultural humility perspective on individuals that we relate to, but not with those that we don't relate to. So that's what we've been constantly being fed, right? And I think the work that we do ultimately is actually removing that barrier and really making sure that everyone recognizes and acknowledges that while those lived experiences might be different, what we need to really acknowledge is that they are going through hardship. And that's where empathy comes in. That's where understanding that someone's background may not necessarily be the reason why they are in that state, but there are many other factors contributing to their lived experience, right? And then how is it that we can be part of the change for them, how we can actually be support to them, whether it is through different grant programs through the city or the county through their different mental health and substance use services, right? But it's really identifying and removing some of those barriers. It always comes down, again, to a point of the cultural humility piece, which is about really taking a step back and looking at the fact that I may not have all the answers to everyone's questions about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but really open to learn, to adapt, and to be able to use that to help someone else in the future. And I think that's critical. It's, again, demystifying what DEI is and then being able to build upon that. Matt, I think you had something else.
Yeah, I mean, talking about being an adoptive parent, that's something really personal to me because my husband and I adopted three amazing kids. We had the benefit of being foster parents to two additional children. And that is one of the big reasons why I'm doing this work, is experiencing where my own children came from, getting to know their families. And this is something I haven't talked about in a long time. I've worked in child welfare for many years. But like I've shared with folks before, I grew up in Santa Barbara and I came from a very privileged family. And when my husband and I went into the process to create our own family, we knew that there were children right here in our own backyard that needed a safe, loving home. I didn't realize that taking that step in that journey would push me into a whole nother career path. But I had my own personal biases when we started that process, where I came to the table thinking, you know what, these kids were removed from their home because their parents did something wrong. But in all reality, it wasn't that. It was that their parents were experiencing massive challenges, whether that be cultural, systemic challenges, poverty, being unhoused. And they had the same goals that my husband and I did for our kids and for their kids, was that we wanted them to be successful, but they just didn't have the tools to be able to do that. And as foster parents, we had the opportunity to take a step back and also a step in to their family and provide them with guidance and potentially accessing those tools. And that, you know, for me has been a big part of why this work is so important, because my own kids have come from different backgrounds that I've had to understand on a very personal level. And how does that impact me as somebody that operates from a place of extreme privilege in this society and in this community and even in my own profession? It goes back to that empathy mm-hmm. and that understanding and really taking time to understand our own biases and figure out how do they come into play in this really complex equation of life and of society and of community, and how do we craft a future that includes everybody and doesn't exclude anybody.
You want to trademark that last comment?
Right? I definitely will. That will be what I do after we're done with this radio show.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I do believe that even those people in our community who are most skeptical about the value of DEI programs are part of the population that is not skeptical about the needs of foster or adoptive children. So I think you have an opportunity really to look at some things that need to be more inclusive that people didn't realize had that need. And I think your explanation and your talking about your adopted children and your foster children is important to that, and I thank you for being part of that. We have been talking about a topic that I suspect we could probably do 5 or 6 radio shows, and I can tell you also there are a number of private organizations in San Luis Obispo County, both nonprofits and businesses, that have people in positions similar to Matt and Nestor, so maybe we might explore this with how the private sector is looking at it in the future. But I appreciate my guest being here today with us. And as my notorious reputation is, I talk too much, so I always make sure that my guests have at least the last few minutes. Nestor, I'll start with you. What do you want to make sure that people maybe come away with today and understand about the value of what you do and how it can fit in our community's life?
Fred, thank you so much for having us, really. Something I like for the community to know is that DEI is for everyone. Whether we want to call it diversity, equity, and inclusion, or simply having more empathy for our fellow community member, it is for everyone. We really believed in valuing everyone's identities and perspectives as they come. And being able to build opportunities in which we create dialogue, we create community, and ultimately where everyone can feel included and feel like they want to be part of a community in which they see themselves represented there. Lastly, the one thing I do want to make a little plug on here is about the city of San Luis Obispo, their efforts for really, really making sure that those voices are being represented in decision-making processes. And as I mentioned earlier, there's a survey going on for the city's financial plan for the next 2 years. And again, that's available in English and Spanish, and it's something that I think can really help build a strong momentum, have an impact directly into the community for what we really want to see moving forward. So for today, I really hope the community can listen to us, engage with us, and see us as individuals that are really working to make a change and transformational change in the entire community and the organizations that we work for.
Thank you. Matt?
Yeah, well, I'll just add on to that. Like Nestor said, you know, DEI is for everyone. Within behavioral health, we're really focused on inclusion and belonging and what that looks like both internally for our staff, highlighting their voices, highlighting their expertise, what they bring to the table, and then really honoring our community members and clients that are coming in and making sure that when they are in our clinics, in our offices, talking with us on the phone or via telemedicine, that they are truly understood and heard, and they're a part of their journey to recovery. The work of equity requires continuous work. It requires conversations. It requires being uncomfortable, but also moving past that discomfort into a point where we are all working together for a shared vision for the Central Coast. I know we come at this in a different way. For me, it's for behavioral health and what we're doing there. But then also being somebody that works within the city of San Luis Obispo and lives within the county of San Luis Obispo, we're all interconnected. That goes to the other part about doing this work together. We've said before that nobody is excluded in this. I think that's a narrative that is counterproductive to creating great communities, great programs, great policies. I think what we're seeing in this day and age is that we have to have more conversations. We've moved away from that challenge of sitting down, sitting across the table from one another and actually having discussions and truly empathizing with the other person, even if we vehemently disagree on different things. And I just want to leave with, like, small actions have a big impact. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that I remind myself of every day, and I think everybody that works within diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging is always mindful of, is it's little steps forward together that have the greatest impact rather than huge steps forward alone.
We'll leave it with that. Thank you, Matt. This has been Central Coast Voices. I'm Fred Monroe, your host today. I'm glad we've had a good program, and we will discuss this more again in the future. Next week's program is not finalized yet in our notes, so I'm not quite sure who what is going on there. But Central Coast Voices will be back every Thursday at 1 o'clock. I'll be back in the middle of December and actually going to be talking with folks from CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates. If you have any comments you want to share with Central Coast Voices, we are at voices@kcbx.org. Thank you to listener-supported KCBX Radio for helping us sponsor and have a venue for this program. Thank you to Brad Kyle for being our engineer today. Thank you to Matt Pinnon and Nestor Velos Pasalacqua.
There you go.
I'm terrible with names, and I'm sorry about that. But thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you for being part of this program. This has been Central Coast Voices.